Hello everybody, welcome back for another video. Hope you're all doing well and that you are all having a great day. I'm gonna take things a bit slower today. It's the weekend. Like my other previous weekend videos, I used to not talk a bit slower, but you know, I wasn't rushing through things as quickly. Thought it would just be kind of nice to talk at a normal pace, at least for today. This is gonna be a blend of like a weekend video and also like a it's almost the end of the year type video. There's a lot of stuff that's been happening in the cryptocurrency space. Like I said before, sometimes I do not get around to hitting all of the news. So this will be like a little brief compilation of a lot of things that have been happening in the cryptocurrency space. As we are at the end of the year, as you might imagine, the discussion is now on, as we are about a day and a half away at this point, what is going to happen with crypto in 2019? It's just something that's pretty much on everyone's mind. 2018 has not been the year that we expected. While it was great that we had an enormous amount of infrastructure build up and all these other things, the big question is now, are we going to have like another downtrend, or what exactly is going to happen in 2019, especially after we've pretty much had all of this build up that's been happening? Bitcoin is not dead, it says. Management consultancy A.T. Kearney has concluded in his 2019 predictions. The latest source to DeFi claims it is trending to zero. I mean, I'm pretty sure this is, if you haven't heard that Bitcoin is going to zero, you must be very new to the cryptocurrency space. The content idea is that we have people in crypto. We either have people who are advocates or people who despise us. And the constant claim is that because we have, I think Bitcoin's lost, it was somewhere between 70 to 80% of its market value as it was at the end of 2017, is that Bitcoin is seemingly going to the price of zero. Little side note, that is almost at this point mathematically impossible. We spoke about that before. There's always like a lowest number that people will allow something to go. Like, if there's a house in your area that costs $1 million, you're going to be like, well, so it's $1 million. If it falls down to 100,000 but still looks exactly the same, like nothing has changed, it's still beautiful inside, you may then consider it. If the price goes to around $25,000 and you know that it's worth potentially a lot more, you would probably then jump on it. So Bitcoin is, the only way that Bitcoin would go to zero is if the entire blockchain was completely destroyed, or if some other coin completely stomped out the entire cryptocurrency space. What I'm trying to say is that it's highly unlikely, for those who didn't get that. As part of its annual series of 10 forecasts for the coming year, somewhat less outrageous than a similar tradition at Saxo Bank, the company declared Bitcoin and altcoins to be post-crash. One of the major things, you know, we were 3 weeks ago, remember when we had like a little bump up in Bitcoins, but not a lot, it was like 15-20% bump up because we were somewhere near like 32. Did we even pass by 3,000? I don't remember anymore. I remember it was just a lot of like fluctuations going back and forth. And somewhere around the $3,000 number is where a lot of experts were coming forward, going on TV, and especially after we had that bump up, is that we had passed by the point of not no return. That sounds too ominous. Like we'd passed by the point that we were waiting for. We were waiting for the Bitcoin price to bottom, and that as prices have been steadily, slowly going up over the last weeks or so, couple days now, that we are apparently past the point of the crypto market crash, and it's just a matter of time before it continues to go back up. After celebrating its 10th birthday with nearly, there we go, an 80% loss against all-time highs in December of 2017, Bitcoin is set to start its second decade in a state of post-crash consolidation and maturation. He says, Bitcoin will lead the consolidation and maturation of the cryptocurrency market. The tone is upbeat and contrasts with the latest warnings from analysts that the Bitcoin price has not yet finished falling. As Bitcoin is reported, both Tone Vase and this week, Morgan Creek Digital Asset co-founder Anthony Pompliano envisage, they see Bitcoin dropping to an area around $1,300 per coin. While we may have people who are well-versed in the cryptocurrency space, there is no one who can tell you definitely exactly where any price is going to go. And this holds true, especially for pretty much everything in the cryptocurrency space. Last year, we had predictions that the highest Bitcoin would go would be 5,000. It would top out at 5,000. That would be a wonderful, great year. By the time we hit around 5,200, the talk was we would hit around 7,000. When we hit 10, we then hit 20, about, what was that, 13, 14 days later. So no one can tell you exactly how low that it's going to go. But a number of analysts, even don't be confused, Tone Vase, for those who don't know, Tone Vase and Pompliano, people call him Pomp. I think that's kind of weird. These are like some of the maximalists of the Bitcoin maximalists out there, especially Tone Vase. If I'm pretty sure this is a Tone Vase I'm thinking of. They envision a Bitcoin pretty much being like the world currency type thing. So don't assume that because they're talking about a $1,300 Bitcoin, they think is going to go down. What a lot of, and I want to say like hyper analysts, those are people who, normal people may look at the Bitcoin price every now and again, but hyper analysts are constantly combing through every single bit of data that we have, which is very interesting because we don't have a lot. Bitcoin is barely 10 years old. And we have people looking past and, you know, trying to see what the correlations are between different types of markets that we have. And people are saying that they think the area that we're going to fall is somewhere below $2,000. We've had people saying that even 1,000 could be like the huge jump off point. Once again, it goes back to that number. How low can an asset go before other people decide this is far too low? It's kind of like, imagine 20 people standing in a circle and there's something like right in the very center of it. Like the first person who grabs it, like is the person who acquires it. But like if it slowly goes down in value or even rapidly goes down in value, eventually at some point someone's going to grab it because they think it's too undervalued. And this is general idea is that we thought, or rather the market as a whole, everyone around the world, we're assuming that we would have some type of a rally at the end of this year that would push us away from these numbers completely and we would start the next bull run up. But these people think that we need to go like this, slam down as far as possible, and then at that point, everyone around the world collectively panics and pretty much goes, Bitcoin is $1,300 down from $20,000. There's, what is that, $18,700 to be made if it even goes back to where it previously was. I will tell you right now, as your friend, especially for those of you who've been here for quite a long amount of time, if Bitcoin drops anywhere below 2,000, I'm going to have a very long discussion with my bank account because the profits to be made there are just ridiculous. And I repeat once again, we hit 20,000 before we've had all this infrastructure built up, before Lightning Network even came out, before everything, before the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. I still believe in my heart, I don't know if it's going to be next year, I'm hoping it's next year, that would be nice, just so we can kind of get the ball moving, or if it's going to be 2020 or 2021, I don't know the exact number. At some point, Bitcoin, because of the attention that we have around it, is going to hit $100,000. I'm sure you can feel it. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. It won't be that difficult for us to do a 5x with the amount of interest that we have in the market, the amount of people who have been buying with Grayscale, getting into the cryptocurrency space and owning 1% of all the Bitcoin. At some point is going to hit 100,000. So the thought of a anywhere near $1,000 Bitcoin terrifies me, because if we have that huge drop, it means every other asset is also going to crash down. But on the flip side, buying something for $1,000 and then eventually hitting $100,000 does not sound bad at all to me. Anyway, I think there's right. So yeah, pretty much the idea is that we are entering a time, and I mean, I'm a bit wishy-washy, 50-50 on kind of this argument as well. What it says right here is that by the end of 2019, Bitcoin will reclaim nearly 2/3 of the crypto market capitalization as altcoins lose their luster because of a growing risk aversion among cryptocurrency investors, end quote. When you listen to different podcasts and stuff like that, it's kind of all over the place. You either get the rhetoric, so it's clear lines have been drawn in the cryptocurrency space right now. You are either a Bitcoiner, you are an altcoiner, or you are a I want to make money coiner. I stand somewhere in the center as best I can. It's clear to me which coins are going to be the winners. I think that Bitcoin is obviously going to be one of the winners simply because of its name and the amount of attention that's being paid around it. Now, a large number of people who think that Bitcoin is going to have over around 70 to 75% of the market, leading us to a world in the next 2 or 3 years, this is just what other people are saying, that Bitcoin will become so dominant that the other altcoins, and not all of them, the other altcoins will begin to crumble under its weight, and people will realize in like another hardcore FOMO moment and pretty much go, I could have invested when it was this amount. Now the price is 150,000. My altcoins aren't really going anywhere. I'm going to sell off my altcoins and push them completely into Bitcoin. I can't remember the name of, there's about five different Bitcoin podcasts and I can't remember the exact name of them. There's one of them that I found out was actually for Bitcoin Cash, which I thought was really funny because I feel like I had been duped as I was listening to it. They kept on saying Bitcoin over and over, and then someone slipped and said Bitcoin Cash, and I was like, I'm listening to a Bitcoin Cash podcast. Everyone thinks, I mean, Bitcoin Cash and SV aside, that Bitcoin is going to be this dominating factor. This is where I kind of disagree. I think that Bitcoin will live harmoniously with a number of other altcoins. We're not gonna have 2,000 altcoins within the next 3 years. It's just not gonna happen. You've already seen the delistings and the other, not decouplings, things just, you know, aren't going too well for other altcoins right now. But I do believe that Bitcoin having a great 2019 is going to be a very good 2019 for everyone. There are a lot of people who think that it's kind of weird to even think this, that we have three more. This is the number that I've gotten from other people I've been listening to in podcasts, from not necessarily from Tone Vase or Pompliano, but like other major heads in the cryptocurrency space who are like hyper analysts. They say that they think we have at least three more boom and bust cycles. So when we have the prices where we are right now, we're going to have a large market movement up and we're going to crash again sometime around 2021. This is the idea. And then we're going to shoot back up and I'm going to slam back down around 2023. And after that, people think that the sky is going to break open and Bitcoin is going to fly through it. Because every single crash that we've seen thus far has had almost like a purging of different altcoins that we didn't need, never really needed. When I first got into crypto and we had that major crash that kind of terrified everyone, and the big question was, oh my gosh, I think Bitcoin was around like $200. It was like, is Bitcoin ever going to come back? We had a lot of, I remember WorldCoin in, I think there was Infinite Coin, Infinity Coin. There were so many different coins that completely disappeared. Like it was like a wave came and kind of washed them away. And I think we're at the other period where crypto has gotten so big. This is why we have thousands of altcoins right now. The position of many people, and especially for me, is that 2019 is gearing up to be an absolutely amazing year. If it does not do as is expected, I will call shenanigans. I will say that something is definitely wrong. The cryptocurrency market right now, as it is, has too much attention for prices. I get, you know, whales selling off and prices dumping down to 1,000, 1,300, 2,000, what have you. But even now, I think just the amount of very rich people and institutions who are muttering the words cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's price being so low, is a little off to me. I told you guys before, when I got into crypto, if anyone mentioned the word Bitcoin on a television show, on the news, anything like that, there was like an immediate 10 to 15% boost up. I understand that the market is more mature. I understand that crypto is not as easily swayed. It was in 2017, so it's kind of weird that these sways aren't happening right now. When you have an enormous amount of people who are talking about building complete infrastructures, if we were in 2017 right now, let's say we are in May 2017, and we had heard that the New York Stock Exchange was going to launch a cryptocurrency trading platform, and then the NASDAQ came forward, and then Fidelity came forward, we would have a like $65,000 Bitcoin right now, simply because of the amount of attention that would have happened around it. But 2018 has been a year of growth, and everyone kind of thinks, including me, that 2019 is going to be just an astronomical year. Once again, I have to say that it is not financial advice. These are just obviously my own opinions, but you pretty much see where I'm coming from. If you've been with the channel for at least a couple of months, you've seen the attention that the cryptocurrency market has gathered. There was nothing like this in 2017. What we had in 2017 and 16 and 15 and 14 were random articles with like maybe one person writing something that was praising the cryptocurrency market, or that so and so might potentially think about potentially adding Bitcoin and or Litecoin at that point to their platform as a payment method. We had nothing like this before. So it indicates to me that the future is very bright. It's just a matter of when someone kind of flips that switch, if I can kind of say that. Next up, a Wall Street Journal article published on the 28th of December suggests that Bitcoin's correlation with traditional asset markets has been high in recent days. Citing data from research firm Excalibur Pro Inc., the Wall Street Journal states that the top cryptocurrency has traded at a 0.84 correlation to gold over the past 5 days, where a -1 correlation indicates complete inversion and a +1 is perfect correlation. So you see, we are very close to a +1. Moreover, Bitcoin has traded at a 0.77 correlation to the Chicago Board of Options Exchange Volatility Index, or VIX, a benchmark index for the United States equity market volatility. While the Wall Street Journal frames the strong correlation between traditional markets and what the article dubs as the rebellious first cryptocurrency, Bitcoin as something of an unexpected twist of fate, the article also offers several explanations as to why the pattern may have formed. I don't know if it has it inside of here as well. I think it was actually Pompliano, the guy who we were just talking about, who mentioned just a couple of days ago that he said that there's actually no correlation between Bitcoin and any other market, which I thought was a little interesting, simply because humans tend to repeat their former, not mistakes, history repeats itself. And it's not like Bitcoin is that different from many other assets and or currencies, depending on which side of the Bitcoin that you actually look on. Even if you consider Bitcoin to be property or to consider it as an actual asset, you will still see correlations between the boom and bust cycles or any type of market that we look at when it comes to property valuation, or if you even look at it on the other side as an actual cryptocurrency. Currencies also go through these entire things, especially this is also tying into where those three other boom and bust cycles come in. People were saying that in order to be a currency, you have to go through multiple things. They noted there was a historian on it. It was actually kind of weird. He was talking about how gold's development as a store of value and also as a currency in the past worked itself out. It wasn't simply that someone dug into the ground, found something shiny, and they went, whoa, everyone in the world has to start using this right now. And they called up all their friends on the telegraph or through rocks and pigeons, however people did stuff back then. And, you know, it was simply adopted. It started out the same exact way that Bitcoin did. Bitcoin was first a collectible. People thought it was kind of cool. It was worth a couple of cents. Wow, these things are kind of interesting. You know, I would be kind of cool if people would use them. And then it starts out as something speculative, same way it did thousands of years ago. People were trying to gather as much of it as they could, and they were printing the faces of their leaders and their kings and their queens onto it and say that this was our gold, this was our so-and-so. And eventually at some point it just became adopted as a store of value because the price was generally leveled off. It kind of intensified is not the word that I'm looking at. The point is Bitcoin is going through those exact same phases. So to say that it's not correlated in any way, this is why I said no one knows exactly extremely what's going on. Everyone has kind of their own idea about what they think could be happening in the cryptocurrency space. Not to say that Pompliano is wrong. I don't know the guy. He could be completely correct on every single thing in the entire world. But we've seen, even remember before a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about if there was any exact correlation between Bitcoin and the stock market. And we kept on seeing that every single, so for a long time, as the stock market went up, cryptocurrencies stayed flat. And we would have little bumps up and down, and it was kind of like if the stock market had like a nice like 8% rally, crypto would go up by like 2%, and everyone's like, wow, that's amazing, they're correlated. And then sometime the last couple of weeks ago, we saw that every single time that the stock market went down, cryptocurrencies were also going down. Every single time that there was like a short rally in the Dow Jones or the S&P 500, that same exact hour, crypto would also have a rally, and people were suggesting and saying that they think that because cryptocurrencies are tied to the entire fintech world, like anything like digital anything, Amazon, Google, Apple, what have you, as they were also going down, the prices of crypto were going down simply because people saw it as a hyper speculative digital asset. Apparently, certain days we trend very closely to gold, which I mean isn't kind of the out of the ordinary, as gold is no longer really used on an everyday daily basis. No one's going to buy a T-shirt with a little chunk of gold, and it's expected that at some point this is like the most speculative thing in the entire world. It's estimated that there's, I think, like $10 trillion. Don't quote me on that exact number. $10 trillion worth of gold around the world. I think some of the largest governments in the world, I think, control like $1.1 trillion worth of gold. And the future thinking is, as interesting as it might sound, is that at some point, as Bitcoin's price continues to go higher, people will think, why am I in gold? Why haven't I transferred my money into Bitcoin? And also on the other side of that as well is there are a lot of people who are, I was reading an article, and one of the craziest things that I didn't even think about to kind of, you know, talk about it. You may have heard, I'm sure you've seen movies, you've seen articles, you may have seen documentaries about it, where you have people who have these like offshore bank accounts and they hiding potentially hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in gold and art and all this other stuff on these islands, on these other places. What I didn't even realize was is that even if you have your money on some crazy offshore account, the U.S. actually has jurisdiction for some reason over the entire world, and they can tell those governments and those other places, freeze that account, we don't trust him, he can't have his money, freeze whatever's inside there. Like I said, I didn't know it went that deep, but apparently it does happen. And the article I was reading, they were talking about they expect within the next 5 years that there's going to be a huge shift, because once Bitcoin passes by a certain price, remember I told you before, when you pass by the $10,000 number, this is when everyone gets very interested. Why is Bitcoin over 100,000 or 10,000? When Bitcoin passes 100,000, people will have the exact same mindset. What is causing this thing that I've never heard of or that I don't have to go up this high? Will it go up higher? And by the time Bitcoin potentially hits anywhere from a quarter of a million to $1 million, the idea is that the stabilization rate of the price of Bitcoin will kick in. That's not to say that it won't go up or down, but up or down days will be anywhere from around 1% as opposed to 15% in either direction. And as we continue this slow uptick in the price of Bitcoin, is that people around the world who have their money in offshore accounts are simply going to sell off their assets as quickly as possible and push them into Bitcoin. Why? Because not only do you still control your private keys and your Bitcoin, there's no way for the US government to pretty much go, we don't like what you're doing, freeze that guy's account. They can't freeze your Bitcoin account. So when people talk about institutional investors, it has to do with the people on Wall Street and stuff like that, but a lot of people don't take into account how much money is actually stored around the world. It's not just in your state or in your country or in your town, or if you live near a mountain in Switzerland, it's not just there. It's all around the entire world. And the idea is that at some point, people will sell off their gold, which is all, I mean, it's the weekend, we have time. There was something that I think when I had just got into cryptocurrency, like just, and I remember I was reading around as trying to absorb as much information as I possibly could. And I think one of the most interesting things was at the time is that when I was investing in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds and stuff like that, and trying to make, you know, huge profits, what have you, there was an article that I read about this guy. He was talking about, he was a wealth manager for multiple people around the world. He said he had one person in particular, he obviously couldn't tell the guy's name. He said the person was around anywhere from like 45 to 50, somewhere around that age. He was like, if you've watched television, you definitely know this guy. And he said, I heard about Bitcoin and it was very interesting. And I was trying to figure out if it was a potentially, you know, good place to have money flowing into from my client. So he said he went to his client and was like, hey, there's something called Bitcoin. I know you like really weird investments. How would you feel about even throwing $1,000 into it? And the guy was like, yeah, I don't know what a Bitcoin is. I'm not putting any money into that. He said he went back to him weeks and weeks and weeks. He was like, I think you should at least allocate a small amount of money into this. And he said the guy was really big into gold. And he said he dug into one of his drawers or something like that, pulled out a gold coin and kind of flipped it to him. He was like, okay, put that into it. At this point, I think gold was around $1,200, maybe somewhere around that time frame. Gold's price hasn't really changed over the last 10 years. This is why Bitcoin has been seen as like a better investment, because it's outperformed gold. And the guy said he took the gold coin, sold it, and put all of the money that he got from it into Bitcoin. Just so happened, it was at the time when the price of Bitcoin was around like $1 or $2 or something like that. And he ended up getting around 1,000 Bitcoin. By the time, so this news story had come out just around the time when Bitcoin's price had rushed up to $1,200 for the first time. And he said his client called him in the middle of the night and was pretty much like, remember that $1,000? You know, I now have $1,000,000. He was like, can you buy any more of those Bitcoin? So it's kind of like the idea is that eventually people will start to sell off the other assets that can either be seized or stopped, or I mean, you can't really, like, no one is getting onto an airplane with this much gold, this many gold coins, and expecting to kind of get past customs or security or anything like that. You're not getting past any of them. But if you have a this much space right here, and you have a Nano, and it has this much value of gold, but in cryptocurrencies or even in your side pocket, it's kind of the idea behind it. Anyway, I didn't mean to spend too much time on the correlation with gold, but I mean, like I said, it's the weekend. There are so many other times when I want to spend like a bit more time on videos. So I try to make them like a certain length. I'm pretty sure you've noticed before. It's not that I rush through things, is that I really don't want to take up too much time of other people. Like, I understand that everyone has other stuff to do during their day, but there are just so many interesting things. I think so much time is focused on how much money can I make from cryptocurrencies, and people miss a huge amount of the movement that's happening behind the scenes. Like, how many people are or maybe have been collecting gold and silver for a very long time who are now cashing out to be able to buy into cryptocurrencies, or even more specifically just into Bitcoin, because they see that there is a potential for a major price movement. Like, there's a huge difference between getting a gold coin at 1200 and a Bitcoin for a dollar. And I think, I don't know gold's price right now, I'm pretty sure it's around 1200 as well. Over the course of a 10-year period, and you have something that's $3,000, you would have made millions of dollars from just one gold coin. There's so much movement happening behind the scenes. Like, it's not just people trading cryptocurrencies back and forth. There are people who are liquidating other assets and pushing them completely into Bitcoin. And this is kind of where we get those valuations for trillions of dollars. Like, there may not be, rather there actually are. It's believed that there are trillions of dollars worth of fiat currencies around. But when you look at the entire world's like money and debt combined, it's in the quadrillions of dollars. And also when you look at like the, like, personal wealth also isn't factored into these things. Like, you don't talk about how much fiat currency there is around the world, and also equate how much the value of a building is. Like, no one is taking into account the New York City real estate when they talk about how much like money someone has in the bank. So there's a lot of movement going on, and a large part of it's moving towards cryptocurrencies. And I think it's important to keep sight of these things, especially when you think about where crypto is going to be going into the future, because it's looking like it could be very good for every single person involved. On top of this, I thought this was actually kind of interesting. Briefly reading over through it, obviously, and I'll tell you about it. It says Bitcoin can help 4 billion people around the world living in authoritarian countries, according to a new essay from the Human Rights Foundation chief strategy officer named Alex Gladstein, or Steen, depending on how you want to say it. And there are a few countries as receptive to cryptocurrencies as Venezuela. In fact, take a look at the information from local Bitcoins, and you'll see citizens of this impoverished, okay, Latin American community are buying up Bitcoin like they're going out of style. We spoke about Venezuela before multiple other times for those who are driving or something like that and can't necessarily look at the screen. It's a chart, and the chart is low, and then at the very end the chart is high. I can't give you any more specifics. We were talking about Venezuela, but I don't know if they actually have a chart here. No, they don't have an actual they talk about Venezuela, Colombia, Argentina, and a number of other countries around the world who are going through like strong inflation and or hyperinflation, especially the situation that we had earlier this year with Turkey. And it's very interesting. Like I've said this before as well, the articles that you stumble upon when you're trying to find, I guess it's just information or trying to read anything about the cryptocurrency space. I spend a large amount of my time, if I have nothing else to do, I'm either reading white papers, reading about cryptocurrencies, or trying to find news articles about things that are happening in the cryptocurrency space. And I was thinking last night about how it's very weird because you don't put it into this exact perspective when you're first thinking about it. Like Bitcoin has become this, like, not a cash grab, kind of. Bitcoin has become this thing where people are more concerned about with how much money they can make from it, as opposed to the actual ideas of what Bitcoin was and this egalitarian, like everyone has a piece of the pie type of thing. And I thought about at any given moment, you maybe have, I think at the moment we have around 3 billion people in the world who are living below what we would consider the poverty line and stuff like that. And I thought with the amount of Bitcoin being able to be divisible by a certain amount, once again, this is stuff floating around in my head. If Bitcoin did at some point become either a reserve currency, maybe not the world's currency, but maybe became something that was actually transacted with alongside other digital currencies that we have right now and or other central bank digital currencies, even if you split Bitcoin down just to a 0.01 and Bitcoin ended up being worth, what was it, $10 million or something like that, that's still an equal portion of $100,000 per person that each person around the world would get to have. And this also comes down to the math that was in my head was if there's 21 million Bitcoin and you do a 0.10, it comes down to 210 million people around the world that could have 0.10 Bitcoin. And if you move that decimal place over again, it comes down to 2.1 billion. Yeah. 2.1 billion people around the world who would be able to have a 0.01 of a Bitcoin that would then be worth 100,000. Imagine how many people who are living in poverty right now, how that would not even drag them out of poverty. That would drag them to some of the richest people in their countries. There are a lot of articles floating around like this where they talk about how Bitcoin is very useful. And I was kind of diminished is not the word I'm looking for. I was kind of depressed isn't also the word. I was kind of down for a while because the people who I thought would benefit from cryptocurrencies the most were people living in these countries. And 2018, and is very surprising, as prices have been going down, these are the people who have actually stuck their heads out the furthest and made sure to actually get into cryptocurrencies. If we get into a situation where Bitcoin ever goes above $1 million, I actually hope very strongly that a lot of people who could benefit from it the most are getting into it. There's definitely a huge uptrend that we see right here of people who are getting into cryptocurrencies. Even just in Venezuela, we're getting into Bitcoin. And I'm glad that it happened during a time when prices have been going down. I really desperately wish that I could tell anyone, obviously, when to buy or what to buy in cryptocurrencies. I give you an idea of what is potentially going to be one of the larger players in the cryptocurrency space as time goes on. I think it's very important. I'll put it this way. I think it's very important for everyone to look into cryptocurrencies to see if it's something that they are comfortable with and if they would like to put some money into. Also on the side of this, I mean, whatever. Once again, it's the weekend. I don't care. I'm going to talk about it. I was, oddly enough, I was looking yesterday. I was sitting on a bus. I think I was going to IKEA. And I was like, how much? Okay, I'll put it to you this way. Imagine you are living in a developing country or a country that's not doing well economically at all. How much $50,000 would actually help you? So I sat there thinking, I was like, imagine in a really weird world where Bitcoin ends up being worth $100 million, what have you, whatever number out there. And you could pretty much say that one Satoshi would be the equivalent of what we know now as one US dollar. And I sat there thinking, I was like, I wonder how much 50,000 Satoshis comes out to right now in US dollars. And I looked at it and it was like almost nothing. And I was like, that would be really weird if people were around the world were simply putting money into Bitcoin and making sure that they at least had 50,000 Satoshis in the event of a $100 million Bitcoin. And then I sat there and I was like, I wonder how much 1 million Satoshis is right now. And I think it came out to, what was it like? I think $20, $23, $24 or something really weird like that. And it was the idea once again. I mean, if you haven't noticed from my other videos or me talking even right now, I have these like really weird fantasies of like cryptocurrency going up to like very high prices and like helping other people around the world who need it. And it's like the idea that you could put, once again, not financial advice, $20 into Bitcoin. And if Bitcoin does become, once again, some reserve, crazy, mega awesome currency and is being used around the world, and then you pretty much turn $20 into $1 million, it's something that kind of gets the brain moving. It's like when I was reading an article, this was obviously years ago, and like you're at these points where you get into Bitcoin. I got into it, like I said, when it was around $200, and you sit there thinking, oh gosh, I wish I had gotten into Bitcoin when it was a couple of cents. And then you look at the prices where they are now, and I'm pretty sure there are people like, oh my gosh, I wish I had gotten into it when it was 200. And imagine a situation where you get into Bitcoin, you put $20 into it right now, and in 10 years, it becomes $1 million. It's a very, or rather the equivalent to $1 million. It's a very weird thing to kind of think about. I'm glad that there are a lot of countries around the world who are slowly understanding, maybe even rapidly, I'm not in these countries, the transformative power of cryptocurrencies to be able to get there. There are a lot of, not that this is not a political channel, but there are a lot of countries around the world who are just not free. They do not have freedom. And I hope that in these countries, we continue to see a lack of banning on cryptocurrencies. The way that cryptocurrencies are setting themselves up right now, I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. Just my honest personal opinion. And there are so many people around the world who stand to benefit from this. Like I said, I mean, imagine, I can't remember the exact number. It had to come down to like, I think 50 cents or something really, really weird like that to be able to get 50,000 Satoshi. Imagine how much that can change someone's life. I was watching something, I watch a lot of documentaries, and they were talking about people in, I can't remember where, it was somewhere in Africa, forgive me for not remembering the country. And they were talking about how these people live on, I think it was something like the equivalent of $2 a day. There was a guy, his wife, I think they had two kids, and they were living like a moderately modest place, but their cost of living was so dramatically low. And I sat there, I was like, what would 50,000, imagine living on $2 a day, 365 days a year, that's $700. That's 7,000, 10 years for you have almost realistically like half a lifetime worth of money just with $50,000. Anyway, I thought it was very interesting. We're seeing a huge trend of people. This is for Colombia. People who are putting money into the cryptocurrency space, Bitcoin, and this is for Venezuela, this chart right here. It's all incredibly fascinating. I hope that this continues. The last thing I really want to see, and I mean this with honesty, is a world where Bitcoin is worth so much and people in developing countries and or less economically stable countries have none of it. And I hope that this chart is also relatively balanced as well, as in there are people who are buying into cryptocurrencies in these countries, but it's more like a spread out. I don't want 15 people alone buying into these coins. I would love if we had at least 10, 15, 20,000 people, families, whatever, just buying a small portion of it, because I think it'll definitely help them out in the future. But yeah, let's move on. It's really interesting. I like making all videos, obviously, but these are just so much more relaxing. I can't really explain it. It's like a, I guess it's more podcasty, but I don't have this. I guess on the weekends I have a situation where I don't really have much to do, so I kind of just like hang around. But I mean, it's very nice to be able to not have to rush through a lot of things and simply talk about the entire topics. I don't mind doing that. It's just a matter of, I know that a lot of people, I get a lot of, I mean, and I can't really ever tell if they're like spam accounts. I really can't ever tell. I wouldn't mind doing these on a daily basis. It's just a matter of, I don't want to bore people. I don't want to have long-winded videos where I talk about other topics that are sometimes important to me and the impact that I think they'll have on the cryptocurrency space. And I don't kind of want to, I don't know. It's very interesting. Anyway, without not continuing forward. It says, it seems as if the Federal Reserve rally really understands the core values of Bitcoin and that launching a national cryptocurrency is pointless. Director of the International Monetary Fund, her name is Christine Lagarde, spoke out about the benefits of central bank digital currencies this November. She said that they could improve security, accelerate financial inclusion, reduce poverty, and afford greater privacy. She even made a reference to cryptocurrencies as a contender in our cashless society, and many crypto enthusiasts took heart. It seemed that finally aging institutions were coming around to the technology and understanding its value. After all, cryptocurrencies can achieve most of the things that Lagarde suggested. They can lower the cost of international remittances, streamline efficiencies, and protect the identity of their users without delving too far into it. And this ties in, I think we were talking about this about 2 days ago. I think that there's definitely a shift that's happened, and I don't know exactly what. I wish I knew the exact reasoning for it. Earlier this year, we had a huge movement from countries, and I don't know if it was just in response to cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin's price being too high, that they were talking about, it was the discussions of banning it, getting rid of it, can't use it anymore, and also the discussions of, it was the governments creating their own cryptocurrencies. Like I said, I think this could have been a knee-jerk response to governments being like, hey, if they have their own and that's really, you know, expensive and important to them, we can kind of mimic the exact same thing. A lot of governments, I think, aren't going to do this anymore. This is why I think we're seeing such a huge push towards stablecoins. You may have noticed one of my other videos that I made about, it has to be 2 months ago now, we had, I think, 37 stablecoins, and at this point, it has to be well over 50, somewhere around there. During the ICO trend, there was a huge backlash from governments all around the world who were talking about, hey, you can't do this. Stop making these ICOs. Stop this fundraising thing. But with stablecoins, we've seen the exact opposite. There's been no government, to my knowledge, who's kind of come forward talking about that you can't make a stablecoin, or you can't make something that's pegged one-to-one to the US dollar, to the euro, which you would kind of think as well that there would be a bit of a backlash like that from the countries, because in essence, it's almost like digitally printing out fiat, even though I know that they have the dollar and or the euro and or the yen reserves. Those reserves are growing at an accelerated pace. We saw at the beginning of this year that Tether had $2.8 billion. I'm pretty sure if the cryptocurrency market had continued growing as it had, I can almost assure you we would probably have a Tether with around $15 billion circulating right now. And I think at some point that's still going to be a major thing that's going to end up happening. It's nice to see that governments are, I mean, they're governments. They're not going to go down without a fight. I'm not expecting them to kind of keel over and kind of say, okay, well, Bitcoin won, guys. Let's pack it up. Decentralization forever. I don't know what they're planning. I hope it's nothing too nefarious. We know that as of right now, and I'm going to discuss this more in another video as well, about the future of, not like the deep future of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, but as far as how they're mutating, transforming into their own right, and that we are slowly getting to a point where it's going to be very difficult for governments to completely get rid of them, simply because of the network robustness, the amount of people who are on the network. It's usually very difficult if you get into a situation where there are maybe, let's say, 10,000 people using something. You can kind of, you know, sweep them under the rug. You can scare them and they kind of scurry away like insects. If you have 100,000 people, it becomes a bit more difficult. If you have, at the moment, it's believed to be 50 million people around the world who are into cryptocurrencies, it's a bit more difficult to scare them. I think 2018 was very scary on purpose. I think they did this to kind of flush people out of the cryptocurrency market, thinking that they would completely disappear and never use crypto again. That's obviously not the case. So this is why I think we're seeing governments at least acknowledge that they can't get rid of it. But there's been a huge movement towards we need to be able to at least tax it and or trace it, which is also very interesting because a lot of privacy layers and these so many things are coming to cryptocurrencies in 2019 and 2020 that a lot of people really don't understand or don't know or haven't even really looked into. Once again, this is because everyone's focused on the price. We're going to live in a world in the next 4 to 5 years, and I mean that in complete honesty, if crypto continues on its same trajectory, where we will be able to transact and buy almost completely anonymously with our own money. And I know it sounds like a little far-fetched. It doesn't sound completely real. If you look at the things that are going to be implemented just on top of Bitcoin and on top of Ethereum, we are going to enter that world very, very quick. And it's kind of weird to think of a world where we actually fully have control over our money. It's kind of odd, if you will, to think about that we will eventually have control over, you know, like it's like you get angry and upset over something for so long. And then when it kind of finally happens, you kind of don't really know how to react. It's not like a happy moment. It's like this weirdly euphoric, not speculative, like you kind of look at it with a side eye to see if it's actually really taking place. To breeze over this one a tiny bit, the National Bank of Kuwait, or the NBK, will be a new member of the RippleNet. This is the first financial institution in the country to introduce the NBK Direct Remit payment solution using RippleNet. The information was released by the bank in a statement, in a recent statement. Ripple continues to expand with new financial institutions all over the world. I think it says it probably the same thing all over again. So this is what we have. And I mean, I'm not like the most well-versed on it. Like, don't assume that I'm like Mr. Master Money when it comes to all of this. But if you look even at the surface, a lot of the countries that we have around the world, especially, I want to say, even if you focus on the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, if you focus on China and even a bit of Russia, they do not really care for SWIFT. SWIFT is kind of a North American European thing. Not to say that it's not in other countries. Obviously, they have desperately tried and are still trying to make sure that they have their foot in these markets. But what the Ripple team has done is they've made sure to kind of target the countries that don't like SWIFT or have a bad relationship with SWIFT. And the UAE is definitely one of them. Still tons of speculation around this. Obviously, we know that people who have integrated RippleNet are able to use XRapid as a method of payment, as it is part of the RippleNet protocol. But I think a lot of the discussions that we have around, how do I say this? I think it's important to note Ripple's success as far as being able to capture markets that SWIFT is or has been up to this point unable to acquire. This is why the Ripple company is incredibly large, and it's not, I mean, you can not like it if you want. They're not going anywhere. The amount of money that they have behind them and the amount of backing that they have from world banks, they aren't disappearing anytime soon. And more comes down to the speculation of, with all the banks signing up to use RippleNet, there's never really any or not a large amount of clarification as to if they're going to be using XRapid. I would assume that multiple banks that we're hearing about these partnerships with in 2018 are probably going to announce in 2019 that they're going to start using XRapid. I was reading through a piece and it was something along the lines of why major financial banks and institutions, major ones, have not signed up for XRapid yet. And when you read through the article, it's very interesting because they note that the main companies who aren't signing up to XRapid or who don't have speculation around them for using XRapid are all American because of the entire thing that's happening with the question mark hovering over XRP's head. This is not a question in other places. XRP in many other countries is simply seen as a cryptocurrency. So for them to allow it to be able to use it as a payment method back and forth is not really a question. It's more a question of that company or something like that simply integrating it. Anyway, this is also something that has popped up very recently. It's good news whenever to hear that they have a new partner or another membership or something like that, because it only continues to expand them. Even the people from the Ripple company have said that a lot of companies who are onboarding right now with XCurrent are trying to see if it actually works. They don't really want to, how do I say this? Nobody really wants to put $1 billion into buying a huge amount of cryptocurrency with a platform that they may not like. So it comes down to if XCurrent actually ends up working for them and they like the way that it, you know, they see that it saves them a lot of money. When or if they decide to switch over to XRapid, they save an additional 70% than they would have saved. Because even, I mean, SWIFT is also very expensive for these companies and banks and stuff like that. So the Ripple people have also said that they onboard people with XCurrent and then eventually tell them you can save 70% more if you simply start using XRP. Very intelligent. So I guess talk about this a little tiny bit. 2017 was known as the year of the ICOs. 2018 has been known as like regulator year and also kind of stablecoin year. We kind of see like a huge emerging trend amongst the stablecoins. 2019 is supposed to be the end of the regulatory question mark hanging over the head. Supposed to be the bull market, and also stablecoins and STOs are looking to be a very big thing. Also, privacy coins, and I'll try and make a video on that as well. Is a huge movement towards them, and or trying to figure out a way to make side chains and or other blockchains on top of normal blockchains that we have right now, and other layer solutions to be able to have private transactions. And I think the most interesting thing about that is that I said this around the summertime. I think this is when Litecoin first announced that they were going to try to add, is obfuscated a word? Transactions that couldn't be traced. And now we're seeing this beef up a bit more. I doubt that they heard my video, but I'm glad that there was some type of a mental link that happened between me and them. The cryptocurrency market is positioning itself to be incredibly large in 2019 and in 2020. And with this comes new adoption. And with new adoption, if we can kind of streamline layers where people can send anonymous transactions, it's kind of no going back from that. Imagine a world where some of the top cryptocurrencies have layers on top of them where you can transact completely in private. No one knows exactly where this money is going. And then someone tells you a year later, they wave a $1 bill in your face, telling you to try and go back to that. And you kind of thinking, I don't want to use that anymore. So 2019 is looking like, 2018 was not a bad year, to put it in the nicest way. Prices went down. This is why I think everyone is kind of in a bit of a slump. Everybody wanted better and brighter and cooler and more amazing and awesomer things to kind of happen. It's just not the way that life was, or that it was going to happen for all of us. Like it says right here, it was a necessary wake-up call. We needed this flush out of all these horrible, horrible tokens. I won't even tell you when the other thing I was listening to, where they were talking about the other three ups and down cycles that we're going to be going through. During the next cycle, the coins that they were predicting weren't going to be here. I'll put it to you this way: they're pretty much forks. That'll give you a good indication of where they think the market is going. They said we're going to have the first one's going to get out like the other additional 1,000 coins that we don't need. The next flush is going to flush out another 500, and then at that point, the idea was that when people see Bitcoin going over 100,000, that a lot of its forks, say it that way, are going to start to sell off and simply buy into the number one coin that we have right now, because they will understand that the other things that they've gotten into are maybe not as strong as they thought that they were. So it's been an eventful year. I'm grateful for the amount of people who have entered into the space, who at least are learning about it. You may have not put money into the market, but you still have a better understanding of exactly what's happening, I guess, beneath your eyes, in front of your eyes. Like, it's kind of weird to think that we have, like, if you're especially using Wi-Fi right now, there are these lights and stuff and beams passing by our heads that we can't really see, but it's an entire network that's being built up. Like, we can't see Bitcoin flying through our heads, but it's worth billions of dollars. And anyway, I'm rambling on. You kind of get what I'm saying. I think 2018 was what it was, and I look forward to the rest of life, and also next year. It's the nicest way to kind of say it. Tron is in the news. Where is it? Tron's founder Justin Sun's plans for blockchain domination seem to be going well. The Tron blockchain now has over 1 million user accounts and has reached over 100 million contracts recorded. The number of Tron addresses or users is growing by between 10,000 and 40,000 per day, according to tronscan.org. Tron user growth now looks like this. It's those who aren't looking at the screen, it's a massive chart upward. I have had my own things about Tron, but I must golf clap for them. Between them and EOS, they're doing extremely well right now. And I think these are, how do I say this? We know that Tron works. That's the nicest way of saying it. There was a lot of speculation as if Tron actually could function as a platform. They've definitely proven themselves in 2018 as a platform that can actually handle an enormous amount of transactions per day. That's about Ethereum addresses. What we have right now, because for those, I don't actually play any of these myself. There are a lot of like betting apps on Tron and on EOS. And this is kind of where we're getting a large amount of this transaction volume per day. But the fact that they can handle it is very good. And it shows that this is kind of the future of where other platforms and people are going to start to build their things on top of these things. I've mentioned before, for those who don't know, I do not have a huge amount of Tron. I think I have like 2 Tron. Not even joking. What we are expected to see in 2019 is that as Tron is like a gaming type of platform, this is kind of what they're like building themselves up to be. People talk about like building games on top of Tron all the time. I'm excited to see if 2019, how many things are going to actually be built on top of it. Because once again, same with EOS, same with every other platform. Behind the scenes, there's a lot of money switching hands back and forth and people talking about that they're going to be building on these things that we simply just don't know about. Whether those are from non-disclosure agreements, whether those are from, who knows, maybe no one just simply wants to announce their project at this time when the market's going down. There was something else around here. I don't know if it actually has it. Maybe it's right here. Tron's DApp Weekly reported revealed the news pointing to the rapid expansion of the Tron ecosystem. The number of live dApps on the Tron blockchain has grown by more than 20 in the past week to reach 61. One of the new Tron apps is called its own decentralized exchange. The point is, the amount of dApps that are going onto these networks are slowly increasing. It's very nice to see. Like I said, I can't put money into every single cryptocurrency project. It's just not feasible. I'm not Mr. Moneybags as much as I would like to. Tron obviously has a bright future. Even where it is right now, if you just get back to the previous all-time high, it's about 18-20x worth of money to be made on it, not financial advice. But it's nice to see that when Tron first was released, a lot of skepticism floating around it. It's nice to see that the project does actually work, that it can handle the needs of other networks around the world. So it was nice to see that Tron is expanding. I decided to talk about that because I like news like this. And there are a lot of people out there who think that I don't like Tron. I don't not like Tron. I just feel like I should spend my time on other projects. Tron came out at a very awkward time in my crypto life where I was focused. I'm focused on like 10 to 12, maybe 15 other projects that I tried to work on diligently, and Tron tried to squeeze its head in there and it just really didn't work. But that doesn't mean that I don't believe that the project isn't going to do very well in the future. It's more like I have my my tunnel visions on and I'm looking in one direction. Yeah. So here we go. Jihan Wu and the Jenke Group, will be reportedly soon retiring as CEOs of leading mining ASIC producer known as Bitmain. Rumors and the departure were reported by Chinese local media O'Daily on the 28th of December. O'Daily quotes an unnamed source with the situation that Bitmain is currently in a transition period. Furthermore, the article also reports that employees allegedly weren't optimistic about the outcomes of the double CEO system. The Chinese local outlet also notes that their successor is supposedly surnamed Wang, without providing further information. That's kind of weird that you would not provide the successor to one of the largest companies in the world. In mid-November, Chinese local media reported that Wu will no longer be able to influence corporate decisions at the mining manufacturer, alleging that he had been demoted from the position of director to that of supervisor. Without reading any more, Bitmain has been going through a lot of changes over the last couple of weeks. They were, and I assume they still definitely are, a huge, how do I say this? They're huge in the market of Bitcoin mining. They control a number of mining pools that dominate the Bitcoin network. I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon, but we had news the last week of the layoffs in Israel. I think they closed the entire Israel place office that they had. I think it was also something about them firing the entire people who were on the, what's it called? The Bitcoin Cash wing of the office, or whatever it's called. And this has led to a lot of people to the question of a potential sell-off, because it seems that Bitmain has been losing funding. And therefore, the speculation is, if you fire all of your employees who are working on Bitcoin Cash, that maybe you're getting rid of Bitcoin Cash. And this is why we had the chart a day or two ago that showed that Bitmain actually has over 1 million Bitcoin Cash. So the speculation runs rampant that they could be selling off their large amount of Litecoin and their large amount of Bitcoin Cash to be able to pay for whatever they have to pay for that they have not been paying for. And now the fact that Bitmain CEOs are potentially going to be leaving the company and or project as well. I guess this face kind of really is a big shoulder shrug. No one knows exactly what's going on. A lot of these companies, I think they, I mean, I would be as well. You are kind of afraid to tell someone when something is like heavily detrimental in your project. That's not to say that something is completely falling apart with Bitmain, but something's, the machine's not working as well as they thought it would. I think there was also a huge, I think they also, yeah, they also make ASIC mining machines, which apparently also aren't doing very well because the market has been trending downward. When, and I mean, the, how do I put this? All of these layoffs, all of this negative news, and I would count this as negative news, not for the entirety of the cryptocurrency space, but just kind of, I mean, just negative in general. I wonder how this will flip on its head during the next bull run. When we had a bull run in 2017, the amount of acquisitions, the amount of companies that were being bought in the cryptocurrency space were completely massive. So I wonder if a lot of these layoffs and firings and stuff like that are going to continue. One can only assume that as if we get like a 10x of prices from where they are right now, that probably a lot of these people will be, I mean, not these two guys as they're stepping down, will be rehired and stuff like that. But there's just so much, I guess this is the doom and gloom area of, remember that chart I had where they were showing like the market phases from Wall Street, and like we get to that point where everything is like red and it's very depressing, and then we kind of like slowly move back up and no one really believes that we're moving back up in prices. I think we're just in that red phase. We're in that phase where money's very tight. Money's not being managed as well as it probably should be. And this is where all the kind of layoffs and stuff really come from. But at least, and this is the nicest way of saying it, is that hopefully for next time when the market does go back up, that these people have financial experts dealing with their funds. And it's also nice to see that during a crypto purge, if you will, that the larger coins that we had last year have remained, that none of them have really slipped off the radar. The coins that I've been speaking about for quite some time in mass have remained, and this is a good indication of where these coins are potentially going to go in the future. Yeah, that's not our news articles. To kind of finish everything off, the crypto market is not doing too bad. For some reason, Bitcoin is having a very big problem passing by and staying over the $4,000 mark. Apparently, $4,000 is a very strong indication of where the prices of Bitcoin is going to go. I think I said this before in the last video as well. We need, at the moment, Bitcoin to go above or stay between 5,000 to 6,000 in order to show that we are in a bullish trend as we move onward towards the first month of next year. Because if we can, and I mean, day and a half left, no one really knows what's going to happen. Probably not, though. But if we can get some good momentum and get over 4,500, maybe even to get to 5,000 in the next 36 hours, it leads us to a potential price of then 10,000 by the time we get backed. But once again, this article over here, there are people who do believe that Bitcoin is potentially on its way to $1,000. I don't see it happening. But to be fair, I also did not see this price when we were floating around $20,000. I would assume that anywhere near or below $1,500 is going to be a huge push out of people who are betting against the price of Bitcoin, and people are going to start buying up rapidly. At the moment, nothing is going down too extensively. You may notice these two numbers right here, Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Cash SV. They're not doing too well. I won't even tell you what people are talking about both projects right now. They're not good, so I decided to not have them in the video. I think that's definitely going to do it. I hope you all enjoyed. I definitely enjoyed talking slower. It was very nice. I should definitely try to do this more often, especially on the weekends. Maybe even sometime during the week if I do like a second or third video. I may just try to slow things down a tiny bit. It's nice to be able to just relax and really like get some of my thoughts out there. There are so many times when I make videos, about 3.5 minutes later when I'm done recording, I sit there and I'm like, there's so much I wanted to say, so many other things that were really important. But I mean, at least I get the most important part of the articles out there. Hope you all enjoyed. Hope you all are having a great day, a great morning, a great afternoon, a great evening, wherever you are. Wherever you might be, I hope it's absolutely fantastic. Thank you all once again for all of your support. I do appreciate it more than you could possibly begin to imagine. Hope you all have been enjoying the last couple of days. I hope you enjoyed the year. This isn't my last video for the year, just FYI. Like, this isn't like a wind down and I won't see you again until 2019. It's more just like a, I don't know, there was so much news about the end of 2018 and certain things that are going to be transpiring in 2019 as well. I thought I'd at least touch on them a bit. Thank you all once again. And yeah, I'll talk to you all soon. See you.